All right. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it is Monday, and that means it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to give you the full reviews of all the new movies. We talk box office and more. You can read these guys at efilmcritic.com, rogerebrick.com, and more. We'll also talk about the box office with Eric coming up a little bit later on. And our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Check us out on Twitter, facebook.com/NickDShow, best way to stay connected with us. It is Monday, which means Monday mornings my dad tells a joke, so it'll be jokey time in a little bit. And Esmeralda and I are going to go head-to-head in another VH1 pop-up video battle. So that'll be coming up a little bit later on. But let's get to the movies and the movie reviews. Let's welcome to the show Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. We will talk about the box office. Before we get to that, later when we get into more details about it, Eric, summer 2016 is continuing to be disappointing in terms of box office, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The Conjuring did well enough this weekend, but those dollars were, you know, sort of expected, so they're still way behind on where they normally would be at this point.
Yeah, and everything that was expected to be huge has been underperforming.
Yeah, I mean, I expected at the beginning of the summer that there was going to be a down summer, but it's basically, you know, like I think I said last week that, you know, whatever your expectations are this summer, you have to drop them by at least $50
million. Yeah.
And in some cases, even more so. And I don't think Hollywood was expecting that. Even some of its mid-range grocers are grossing like half of what they were expected it to do. So,
yeah.
You know, and I'd like to think that that's the moviegoers sending them a message, but, you know, it could just be they have better things to do.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to more of the details about the box office a little bit later on. First of all, I want to thank you guys for coming out Tuesday night for Raiders. Wasn't that unbelievable seeing it on the big screen like that?
That was beautiful. Oh, yeah.
It was
great.
So cool. And it was so much fun. And we were sold out. And so, yeah. But now, you guys would be excited if I showed 1941, right?
Of course, yeah.
No, okay, good. That's going to be the first movie of 2017.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Because we got everything else, you know, planned for the rest of the year.
You can show any Spielberg movie you want, Nick.
I understand that. I just don't, you know, because, I mean, I actually think that a lot of people would show up for 1941. You know, I know it was, you know, when it came out in 79, I was, you know, I was there. I went to see it a bunch of times in the theater. You know, at that time, you know, I was a Saturday Night Live fanatic. And, you know, anything that Aykroyd and Belushi were a part of, needless to say, even John Candy were a part of, I was all over it. And I thought the movie was, I loved it when it came out. But I remember that thing taking, oh, man, did it tank. So, but I think in the years that have passed, a lot of people have grown to really appreciate what a great movie it is. So, anyway. All right. And by the way, next month, July 12th, we'll be showing Airplane at my that should be fun.
That I'm excited to see in a theater.
Oh, you've never seen it in a theater?
Not in a theater, no.
Oh, man. Eric, you must have been too young, right?
No, I saw it in a theater when I was five.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember seeing a preview for The Shining before.
Oh, that's
the hell out of me.
That's not, was it the elevator scene?
Yep.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool trailer.
Yep.
That's a pretty cool trailer. All right. Anyway, Well, thank you guys for coming out. July 12th, go to moviecode.com, MUVICO, or Carmike, CARMIKE, Carmike.com. Tickets are on sale right now for Airplane. And if it's any indication, people are starting to pre-buy their tickets a lot, so because this one was sold out, and I think we'll have a big crowd for that. It'll be July 12th for Airplane on the big screen. Okay. All right, let's start. Colin.
Yeah.
Please explain presenting Princess Shaw.
All right, well, this is a documentary about two people who are almost, you know, half a world away from each other. On one side, you have Samantha Montgomery in the United States. I can't remember what city she's in, but
I think it says here New Orleans.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was just looking at the synopsis. I just pulled it up right now.
Oh, good. Okay. But anyway, she's a woman who, you know, she aspires to be this great singer. She auditioned on The Voice, but, you know, never makes the cut. She goes to, you know, any open mic singing event she can go to. But, you know, she rarely has an audience. And she works as a caregiver for the elderly and has, you know, but as, you know, has many financial woes. She's a new homeowner. But she also posts YouTube videos under the name Princess Shaw and of herself singing, usually a cappella, and or telling her audience, you know, what's going on in her life and using it, as many people do, as a kind of confessional. And she is talented. She gets noticed by this multimedia artist in Tel Aviv who goes by the name of Kutiman. And he takes random samplings of YouTube videos and puts together these amazing video mixes. His work is pretty remarkable. And he happens upon one of her a cappella songs and puts a really catchy background track for her made up of these random YouTube clips. So you have these two stories being told at the same time, and you kind of just sit there for a good portion of the film, waiting for their online paths to cross. You kind of just wait for her to discover what he's done with her song. And the movie does a really wonderful job of alternating between these two stories. His story is mostly told visually. There's not a lot of, you know, he's not talking to the camera at all or, you know, telling the audience, you know, how he does what he does. You just kind of watch him and observe from afar, go about his daily life, and you go watch her go about her daily life. She's obviously much more vocal to the camera. And, you know, her life is filled with a lot of, you know, the kind of day-to-day struggles that we've seen in movies like this before. And you're just kind of in suspense the whole time, just kind of waiting for her to find this great thing that happened with her song and this kind of receiving this validation for her work. You can make a lot of arguments about the movie's, you know, ethics. You kind of sit there wondering, like, how did they film this? You know, whose side did they film first? Did they film it both at the same time? Are they manipulating this somehow? And it's never quite clear. I have my own ideas about what happened, my own theories, and I, you know, I'm not sure if I'm right, but regardless of, you know, how they did this, I think it's a really well-made documentary, and I think it's a really lovely story being told here. I kind of wish it didn't quite just sort of peter out at the end. You know, I kind of wish there was a little bit more of a statement kind of being made about stardom and YouTube videos and, you know, and not necessarily a criticism, because this is not a movie that is critical of the internet or, you know, the people who use it for this kind of thing. It's actually kind of an upbeat profile of the whole thing. But I just kind of wish there was a little bit more substance there. But regardless, Princess Shaw is a really compelling character. I think she's a great singer, and it would be great to see or hear more of her work. So this is a documentary about stardom and being, you know, the hope of being discovered. I think this is a really terrific documentary on that subject.
Okay. Is it playing in a theater in Chicago, or is it just on demand?
It's playing at the Landmark Century.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it is. And I'm clicking on, hold on a second. I think that's the only place it's playing at right now.
Okay. It is available, though. It is streaming as well, if you'd like to check it out. But it is playing at the Landmark, and it's called Presenting Princess Shaw. Do we know if this person has taken off because of this movie? Has she gained notoriety outside of the YouTube world?
I don't know. I don't want to give away the ending of the movie.
Because
the movie does have an ending that that would lead you to believe that one way or the other. But it's music worth hearing and discovering. Definitely.
Okay, cool. All right. Presenting Princess Shaw. It's at the Landmark Century Center Cinema, which is in Chicago, Clark and Diversey. And it's also streaming online and on VOD. All right. You can check it out there, too. All right. Hold on a second, Eric and Colin. And we will come back and review more of the new movies. And a little bit later on, we'll talk about the box office. We got a break here for the news. It's Nick DiGilio and 720 WGN on a Monday morning. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on a Monday morning. Monday morning movie reviews are about to continue. It is Monday, which means my dad calls in and tells a joke because it's a jokey time. Esmeralda and I will again go head-to-head in another VH1 pop-up video board game battle coming up in a little bit. But right now we're reviewing the movies. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week to talk about the new movies, and let's welcome these guys back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
All right, well, let's you guys can handle Warcraft. I did not see it. So, Eric, why don't you tell us about Warcraft?
Okay. Colin, feel free to step in here if I miss anything on the plot of this thing.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So this is the film based on the immensely popular video game that has been around for quite some time now, so much so it's even been parodied on South Park to a brilliant degree. So here you have the feature film version that attempts to take whatever story there might be within that game and plant it to the big screen.
And by the way, can I just say this, Eric? I don't play, I'm not a gamer. I don't play video games. The only thing I know about Warcraft is what I've learned on South Park.
Yeah, pretty much. I might know
that's pretty much.
I know that and the Leroy Jenkins video.
Right. Okay. All right. Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So we know that much.
Right.
Okay. So in the film, there are orcs. You know, I thought orcs were exclusive to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, doesn't Tolkien own that?
I thought so.
Okay.
But apparently not. So, and apparently, you know, someone with Warcraft or the movie or whatever said, you know who needs their own spinoff movie from the Lord of the Rings movie? The orcs. Hmm. So here they are. They're the packs, clans, whatever they are. And they're living in a dying world. And one of their leaders opens up a portal to another world, and it happens to be a world populated by humans, kings and knights and whatnot, and well, they don't want the orcs. They don't want them anywhere near them. They consider them a threat. Some of the orcs are a little bit more peaceful than others, at least the ones that just had a newborn baby. So the orcs are coming, and the king and his minions have to defend themselves from the orcs. Even though no one seems to know exactly what they're fighting about. And that's pretty much it. Colin, am I missing anything here?
No, but I just looked up orc on dictionary.com, and it's basically it's a typical sort of, you know, it's a mythical monster such as an ogre. It's derived from Latin. It's has to do with the it's borrowed from the tale of Perseus, so it's not.
Yeah, well, you know what? And then to think about it, Tolkien also has, you know, elves and
dwarves.
And dwarves.
That's true.
So, and those are, yeah, okay. So I guess I just didn't know. I thought orc was a creation by Tolkien. I wasn't aware.
I never heard of orc. Yeah. I knew of ogres. I never heard of orc.
Yeah, ogres. I knew ogres, elves, all that. So I guess it all falls into the same category. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. And, you know, I mean, people have been, you know, waiting for this movie to sort of fail the minute that they they saw the first previews of the movie. It was considered to be possibly one of the big bombs of the summer, this big CGI production with not a lot of star power. And here I was hoping to go into this movie that it was, you know, at the very worst, was just going to be this sort of this bland CGI, you know, fighting movie with maybe some cool special effects and some things that just, you know, didn't really bore me or whatnot. But this movie is actually quite awful. I mean, not that I'm completely surprised, but, you know, going into this movie, someone described it to me on Twitter as the biggest inside baseball joke that has been perpetrated on, like, an American blockbuster in some time. Critics have compared it to Battlefield Earth. I think probably a more apt comparison is something more along the lines of Dune. in the way that, you know, this sort of this big production with, you know, this very specific world, you know, that is beloved by a very select certain group of people who know the text backwards and forwards, and just, you know, just ultimately not finding a way to draw in the interest of anyone who might not have any familiarity with that world. And I'd like to ask, you know, the gamers who do have some familiarity with it, is really that all there is? I don't know what could possibly be derived story-wise, because nobody in this movie shows any personality with the exception of the orc baby that's on display, maybe the orc's father. I mean, Dominic Cooper, the entire movie, looks like he's taken a dump in his armor. Seriously, Ben Foster playing a wizard? I think that says enough right there. None of the battle scenes are interesting. You know, a couple heads get crushed and whatnot. There's absolutely more violence in this movie than there is in The Conjuring 2, and that gets an R rating. This gets a PG-13. There's just nothing. There's absolutely nothing on display here to draw any sort of interest into this world, into these characters, into these creatures. The promise that this adventure is just beginning, as hinted at the end of the movie, which is probably never going to happen, is just kind of infuriating, that it's just all kind of a setup to some larger world that they've only scratched the surface on. And I don't know how much there really is more to tell. I think I've already spent more time talking about this movie than is actually deserved. This is truly an awful picture.
Wow. Okay. Colin?
Yeah, this is really just a bore. I mean, Eric mentioned Dune. I mean, I think Dune is at least interestingly bad.
Well, I happen to be a really big fan of Dune.
There are good aspects of Dune. It's a monumentally, I think, a silly film, but there's interesting things in it. I'm not totally trashing Dune, but I mean, saying is, like, there's at least moments, no matter what you think of Dune, there are at least moments in it that are not boring.
This is all true. I won't make it seem that I was just completely trashing Dune. I was just making a comparison.
I get where you're coming from, but I just don't want to mislead people. I don't think it's as awful as Battlefield Earth, which is another kind of bad. This is just boringly bad. This is just, like, so bland. The characters are completely interchangeable. For me, it's the orcs versus the interchangeable bearded white guys. that's really all that's going on in this thing, to the point where I couldn't remember which character was which. I have the same question for the gamers. Like, is this good for you guys? Does this work for you? I don't know. I couldn't care less. I can see Duncan Jones, who directed this thing, was a very talented director.
Yeah.
You know, made two very good films, Moon and Source Code. And I can see him trying at times to, you know, humanize this thing as much as possible. I mean, like, the orc characters are a little bit more human and a little more interesting than the human characters, up to a point, but not nearly enough to sort of sustain interest for very long. Yeah, no, this is a complete bore. I couldn't possibly care less what was happening in the film, and I can't imagine its promise to deliver a franchise at the end of the film is going to just kind of fall on deaf ears. No, I don't think anyone's going to care.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we'll talk about the box office later, Eric, but it made $24.3 million, and that's got to be a disappointment. How much did this thing cost?
Well, it cost $160 million production, and I think it's another $110 with prints and advertising. But, I mean, the bigger story with Warcraft, which we'll get into the box office, is just how much money this movie is making in China and elsewhere.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into
and,
that.
I mean, I don't think it's – I mean, you know, if they want to make Warcraft 2 and just release it in China, they could probably get away with it.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think anyone in the U.S. is going to care beyond the next couple weeks.
Now, I'm looking at the cast list here. There's some interesting people in the movie, I have to say, because Clancy Brown is on the list here. What does anybody remember what Clancy Brown does in the movie?
No.
Didn't
even know.
Oh, if you don't remember Clancy Brown in a movie?
He doesn't play a human, to my knowledge.
Well, I mean, his character's name is Black Hand.
Well, that's what that's
okay. Like, well, at least I know who that character is.
Okay.
Right. Even Orc.
I mean, everybody's name is either Khadgar, Gorgon, Gingildarn, and you know, they're all fighting for the land of Gormal.
I love Gingildarn.
I'm looking at the lead character's last name is Lothar. Does anybody remember the Mike Myers SNL sketch, Lothar and the Mountain People?
I do remember that.
Is that just by coincidence? I mean, what? That's crazy. But I'm looking at the cast list. Now, you mentioned Dominic Cooper. But Ruth Negga's in this movie. All right.
Yeah,
now,
two preachers in it.
Yeah. Are either of you guys watching Preacher?
I am.
Colin, are you watching it?
No.
Okay. But Eric, I love it. It's the best thing Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have ever done.
Yeah, that's silly, but
and Ruth Negga rules on it.
Yeah, she's good on it.
She's great, and for me, the weak link in the show is Dominic Cooper.
Well, he's the weak link in everything.
Yeah, I just was, you know, like, but I really love Preacher. I think it's a blast. I think it's a lot of fun. But I just like, I wish they had a different guy playing the lead.
Yeah, I like the guy playing the Irish vampire.
He's awesome. He's
my favorite character so far on the show.
Yeah, well, for me, it's Tulip. She's just, I think she just...
Well, yeah, she's good.
She rules. So, anyway, but I'm enjoying...
And, you know, she's in the next, the new Jeff Nichols movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She's in Loving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. I like her, man. I think she's great. I really do, but evidently she really doesn't get to do anything in this movie.
No, she delivers drinks to Paula Patton, who's got, like, under fangs or whatever they're called.
Okay.
Paul, you have Paula Patton, and you dress her up in like green orc makeup, and she's got like little like fangs.
Yeah,
coming out of her mouth.
You don't do that to Paula Patton.
No,
that's a mistake. All right, okay. We got a break, guys. We'll come back and we'll talk about more of the new movies, and then box office a little bit later. But stay away from Warcraft, according to these two guys. It's not good. And all right, Eric, Colin, you guys, hang on a second, and when we come back, we'll talk more movies. On the Monday Morning Movie Reviews on WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we welcome Eric and Colin back. Eric?
Yeah?
Tell us about Now You See Me 2.
Okay. Well, this is a sequel to the insufferably idiotic Now You See Me from a few years ago.
Which I love, by the way.
I don't understand that, Nick.
It is ridiculous. It is stupid, and every time it's on cable, I don't turn it off.
I don't believe that. but anyway, so here we have the sequel, and there will be some spoiler alerts. So if you've had 3 years to catch up on the first movie, I can't talk about it without spoiling a little bit. But anyway, the Four Horsemen are back, or at least three of the Four Horsemen. Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, and Dave Franco, who were magicians who were recruited to pull off a bunch of elaborate heists in the first movie, recruited by another mysterious magician who was revealed in a final twist. And the fourth horseman in the first movie was Isla Fisher, who is gets a couple lines of dialogue that why she's not in the movie anymore. And she's being replaced by a new female horseman played by Lizzie Kaplan, who fits right in because she's just as insufferably annoying as the rest of the group. And their leader, sorry if you didn't see the first movie, is actually played by Mark Ruffalo, who was a police officer who was supposedly tailing these guys, chasing them down in the first movie when he turned out to be their benefactor all along. In this movie, he's still pretending to be chasing these guys to his superiors, in the meantime funding all of their activities. And as they come out of hiding to pull off a new job, they are actually exposed by another big billionaire played by Daniel Radcliffe, who wants to hire them himself to pull off a job for him in almost an Inception-like mode. So they're forced into pulling off this job for them. Meanwhile, Mark Ruffalo is aiding in at this time, and he has to spring Morgan Freeman from jail, who somehow gets him out of jail, even though he's suspended from the force at that point, and manages to get him out of jail. Morgan Freeman played a guy who exposed magician secrets in the first movie and was actually blamed by Mark Ruffalo for the death of his father, who was a magician back in the old days. If you get a sense of just how stupid Now You See Me was just by my explanation of the sequel, You have really no idea how stupid this sequel actually gets. The sequel gets to a point where it takes contempt for everything from the audience to magic to just to mere playing cards. Everything about this movie is stupid. Let's just get down to brass tacks here. This is the worst film of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
It is. I mean, you want to talk about boring? There's so many things going on in this movie that for it to be so incredibly boring and uninvolving is just some sort of movie miracle in a way. If you were told me that if there was a movie coming out with Woody Harrelson playing twin brothers, and I would think it was the worst movie of the year, I would think you were nuts. But Woody Harrelson actually plays twin brothers in this movie. There's the good brothers on the horseman, and the bad brother is someone who's actually teamed up with Daniel Radcliffe to take him down. There are numerous other twists along the way, including some more real whoppers that, based on the first film, you should see coming by the very end, which spins the first movie off in a completely new direction of idiocy that I didn't think was even possible. There is nothing about this movie that's enjoyable. I don't know if there's anything about this series that's enjoyable. The characters are all, every single character in these movies is unlikable. I challenged people on social media this week because I said that everyone in this cast now has a new worst film on their resume.
Yeah, no, you're wrong.
Well,
because Woody Harrelson is in Natural Born Killers. It's done.
Well,
that's it.
That's a 4-star movie next.
No,
anyway,
it's the worst movie. It's
well,
the worst movie ever.
Get into that. But that's a great movie. Someone gave me a better example than that. But regardless, this is just I have no positive things to say about Now You See Me 2.
Wow. Okay. I don't, man. Okay. It's not good, but I didn't hate it at all. In fact, there are things in it that I liked, and but the Woody Harrelson dual role thing is ridiculous. When it happened, I was like, "You're kidding, right? This can't be real." Lizzie Kaplan was fine. She was the only one in the movie who seemed to kind of want to be there. Everybody else seemed like, "Yeah, we're making a sequel to Now You See Me," and acted thusly. The thing about these two movies. The first one, like I said, I enjoy watching on cable. It's one of those movies. 2 o'clock in the morning on cable, I will watch it, and it is absolutely silly. It is ridiculous. This movie is even more ridiculous than the first one, and the first one was completely ridiculous. This movie has no no regard for physics, for the laws of physics, for the laws of nature, for the laws of logic, none of that stuff. It goes out the window 14 seconds into the movie. But for some reason, there are things in this movie that I enjoyed. There are things in this movie that I thought were funny. For instance, there is like a very long sequence where they're trying to smuggle a computer chip out of this highly guarded room by way of a playing card, and the scene goes on forever, and it becomes so mind-bogglingly hilarious that I went with it. Like after a while, when the subjective camera is following a card down a guy's pair of pants, I was like giggling out of sheer ridiculousness. And I think that's the point. There's no logic to why they're throwing the card back and forth across the room.
Can I interrupt you for a second here?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that sequence alone, it kind of perfectly sums up why I think these movies are like bottom feeding worst of the cinema. Because the whole concept of making a movie around magicians is, you know, we know that magic is fake and ridiculous and whatnot, but we still kind of enjoy it on some level. And the idea that you're going to make a movie around doing incredible feats of magic and using nothing but CGI to create those feats, the idea that we're following around this playing card like it's the feather from Forrest Gump,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and we know that none of these characters even have a playing card in their hand. They're playing ping pong with an invisible ball.
Yeah.
At this point, and just all that kind of stuff, and Jesse Eisenberg falling into moving raindrops
right
around and stopping them, and you know, and I don't want to spoil anything here, but I've been asleep on planes when I've been on the tarmac. I know when something's taken off.
Yeah.
Okay, I've been asleep and aware of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Like I said, all rules of logic go out the window, but it gets so deliriously silly that I enjoyed it, and that's what I liked about the first one. I don't care about the CGI. It doesn't matter to me. I don't hate the characters like you do. When I went into this movie, I didn't expect anything in the movie to happen on planet Earth, and none of it does. And it's fine with me. There are things about it that are terrible, like the Woody Harrelson dual role. I actually think that Daniel Radcliffe is having some fun here, especially early on in the movie when they explain how they go from a tube to China, which I thought was very funny. But ultimately, it's ridiculous. And the ending, which has 53 explanations, I still don't know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. At the very end of the movie, I was like, I don't know. I have no idea what the hell just happened. But I didn't
care.
That's
the thing. Someone actually just didn't even bother to watch the first movie. To come up with that final twist at the end?
No, it makes no sense. I know. I realize that. Okay. And again, I'm defending a movie that's not very good, okay, and a movie that I'm not really recommending. I give it 2.5 stars. But I really don't think it's nearly as bad as you say it is. It's a very goofy movie, and I still maintain that the first one is very entertaining. All right, hang on, guys. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday. Esmeralda and I will go head-to-head in another pop-up video board game battle. And my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's jokey-jokey time. And it is Monday, which means it's the Monday morning movie reviews. So Colin and Eric are here. We got one more movie to review, and then we'll talk box office with Eric as well. So let's bring the guys back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about The Conjuring 2.
All right. Well, this is obviously the sequel to the big surprise haunted house hit film from a few years ago. And it brings back the characters of the Warrens, played by Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, the spiritual investigators who dabble in hauntings and other such phenomena. And this time they go to a London home where a single mom lives with her four kids. And one of those little kids, little Janet, is starting to exhibit Linda Blair-like behavior, Linda Blair and The Exorcist. she's indeed
being possessed. Yeah, unlike Linda Blair's behavior in Roller Boogie.
In Repossessed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just wanted to make that clear.
Right, right.
In case Linda Blair is listening and going, oh, that's not how I behave.
Yeah, she's a big fan. She's a big fan of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
So anyway, she's indeed being possessed by a spirit that used to live in that house, and other psychologists and haunting experts come into play here as the story gets a little bigger, and the Warrens tape the disturbances as best they can. You got to remember these movies take place in the 70s, so you know the technology is pretty limited, and. Yes, unlike many haunted house movies we see, these people are smart enough to move out of the house, but you know that doesn't always do the trick. So this is one of those sequels that I thought, I don't really need this, even though I really liked the first Conjuring very much. And you know, it's bringing back director James Wan and the same screenwriters, I believe. But this is it's continuing the, you know, what the first movie set up, which is basically just being a very intelligently made, very finely crafted horror film, utilizing a lot of techniques that we've seen before, but utilizing them in a way that is fun, and it takes its time, you know, exposing, you know, what the story really is. It also helps that the characters of the Warrens are very likable. You know, normally in a movie like this, we're not supposed to be invested in, well, anybody. But, you know, it's all about the jump out and scare you moments. But these two movies created, you know, two characters that, you know, I really enjoyed getting to know. And, you know, characters that I really do hope, you know, get out alive. As well as the character, you know, all the supporting characters as well. This family that they're investigating, this, you know, single mom and her four kids are really, you know, interesting people. It's an interesting story. And I think if you're going to have a movie where, you know, you have a kid possessed by the devil, you know, she better be a really terrific actress. She better be, you know, Linda Blair good. for this sort of thing. You know, she better have the right look, and, you know, she better be able to pull off both the innocence and the demonic stuff, you know, at the drop of a hat. And this Madison Wolf kid does that. She is terrific in this film. She's been in a few, you know, she's had small roles in a few films, you know, lately. She was in Trumbo. She was in Keanu. She was in The Campaign. And, you know, but this is, you know, I think this is, this could be kind of a, you know, this is definitely a career turn for her. I think there are moments of great humor in the film. I, you know, we talked briefly last week about the length of the film. It does run over 2 hours. I don't think the movie needs to be that long. It does start to feel over 2 hours after, you know, a certain point where the scares kind of start to repeat themselves a little bit. And, you know, the audience is kind of on to, you know, what James Wan is doing. But nevertheless, it doesn't detract from the story, which I think is, you know, has some really nice twists in it. And as overall, I think, you know, a really well told, well acted and, you know, kind of scary horror film that I, you know, I'm glad to see is, you know, number one, I'm glad that, you know, the audiences are have taken to it. So this is a haunted house movie that I'm recommending.
OK. All right, Eric.
I think I like it even more than Colin. And you know, the one sort of complaint that most people seem to have about it is the length. And it didn't really bother me because I could actually watch the way James Wan crafts a horror movie like this all day. And just watching some of the techniques he uses and so many of the scenes in this movie. There's a sequence that I can't stop thinking about where Patrick Wilson has his back turned to the girl, and she's completely out of focus, and yet the image that we see in the background is of what we hear talking, and it's just little moments like that just really just sort of wowed me while I was watching this movie. I don't normally get scared and have big jump moments, but this movie did make me jump at one point. I was unsettled throughout most of it, and you know, even at over 2 hours long, I think Wan brings an incredible balance to the storytelling here. That there's a lot going on. It's structured very similarly to the first movie, where we get to know sort of a prologue case to the Warrens. In this case, the Amityville Horror is the thing that they investigate. I think it has a really wowsome of an opening sequence. And then we get to know a little bit about this new family, and then the Warrens get brought in later. So there's a great balance to the characters and the different struggles that they're going to. The way that the screenplay sort of brings in the idea of potential doubt to the story. I mean, you know, whatever we think about the Warrens in real life, in the movies, we, you know, they're our heroes, so we tend to believe what they believe, and the sort of the idea of, you know, the Christianity that they believe in, and, you know, where they believe this stuff is coming from, is not, you know, really sort of jammed down our throats. It's just, it's part of their belief system, and that's what they're using to trust these people who tell them these fantastical stories. And then when there's elements of doubt that is brought front and center to the audience, I really like the way that the movie handles that stuff as well. I think the performances are really good. I'm really glad Colin mentioned Madison Wolf, who I think is terrific as the girl. I had an absolute blast watching this movie, just as much as I did the original film. There's something about the, I mean, Wan just has so much fun making these movies. And it is clearly he's really developed himself into a true master craftsman. And I think that years down the road, people will be looking at him in this period of his career the way that people, you know, dare I say, used to look at John Carpenter back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, God.
Whatever.
Oh, man.
Whatever, Nick.
All right.
I think that's the absolute truth. And, you know, I'm sorry, maybe he'll have his, you know, his Ghost of Mars phase at some point, too. But I think Conjuring 2 is one of my favorite films of the year.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And here's the thing. I like this movie. I do, and I'm giving it a good review, but I'm probably going to end up sounding like I'm going to criticize it more than like it, but that's just what's going to happen. But we have to break. Hold on a second. Eric and Colin are here, and we'll take a break, and I'll give you my opinion on The Conjuring 2. We'll preview what's coming out next week, and then we'll talk about the box office right here on WGN. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're reviewing the new movies, and just before the break, Colin and Eric both reviewed The Conjuring 2. Colin really liked it and gave it a solid review and is recommending it. Eric thinks it's one of the best movies of the year. Let's welcome the guys back. Welcome back.
Hello.
Okay, let me say first of all that I'm recommending it. I think there's really great stuff in the movie. I think it is creepy. I think there are some nice scares in it. The girl is fantastic. She's great. All right. However, it's way too long. It's at least 15 to 20 minutes too long. And Colin, when you mentioned that Juan's tricks start to be repeated, yeah. And I think they've been repeated from his past movies. He's good at it. He's real good at it. But there's not, I mean, you know, what James Wan does has become what James Wan does in every one of his movies. He does it well, but there's nothing new. There's nothing new in this one that there wasn't in the first one, and I like the first one as well. But I'm looking back at his movies. I did not like the second Insidious. I didn't like the first Insidious. Dead Silence is a terrible movie. Saw, I enjoy Saw. Best movie he's ever directed still to this day is Death Sentence. I don't think he's ever going to make a movie better than that. And I personally, I think Furious 7 is better than this movie. You know, I mean, there's good stuff in it. He needs to cut the stuff down. It gets repetitive at times, but there's no denying that there are some really nerve-jangling things in this movie and sequences, one involving a painting that is really, really creepy. And that character, the nun character, that's the coolest stuff for me. That's the coolest stuff in the movie. He sets things up really nicely. There are a lot of payoffs. The audience I saw it with was screaming. People were jumping. And it works. It works as when you go and see a scary movie with a big audience, it's a lot of fun. And there's no question about it. This movie has that. And it has it sometimes in spades. It's just too long, gets a little repetitive, and I don't think it's nearly as good as a lot of people are claiming it is. I think it's a good, solid horror movie that has some scares. I don't understand, as you mentioned earlier, Eric, I have no idea why this movie is rated R.
No.
Is it because people are scared?
I joked about it that it just, apparently the MPA, you know, peed their pants. And, you know, just like, yes, R rating. But someone pointed out to me on Twitter, it has something to do with the opening sequence, the fact that, and I don't remember, maybe one of you can remind me, I don't remember an actual visual of kids being shotgunned to death. From the Amityville Horror case, there's a moment where there's like an invisible shotgun, and we see like the aftermath. We don't see shells hit anyone.
Right, no, not that
That's
I can recall.
It. That's the most violent stuff in the movie.
Right. I don't know. I don't understand why it got an R rating. Did the first one get an R rating too?
Yep.
See, that doesn't make any sense either.
I don't really understand it, but the climax of the movie does get kind of bloody a bit.
Yeah, I still don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe
it's
the first
ridiculous,
one.
Ridiculous, but.
Yeah, yeah. And again, you know, like having like, you know, like when you've got these characters, and I'm so glad that you guys mentioned Madison Wolf. She's really terrific. And I don't remember, who did she play in Keanu?
I just noticed it on the IMDb page, and I don't remember the specific of seeing her, seeing her in it. But.
I'm trying to remember a little kid in Keanu, and I just can't remember.
Right.
But no, she's great. And when, you know, like in the first one, you got Lily Taylor knocking it out of the park. When you get a couple of people like that who are going to be your possessed people, get good actors, and it makes it all the more believable. Because when you think about it, you're like, oh, here we go. Here's another little kid speaking in a deep voice and, you know, being contorted. You know what I mean? Like that's become like such a cliche. But I mean, the kid is great, and it's just he's a very, very good craftsman. And he can jolt people out of their seats and create a pretty good mood. I just think this movie got repetitive and it was too long. Those were my complaints about it. But other than that, I'm recommending it. I mean, there is not a better horror movie out right now. So that's what I'm saying. Now, I don't remember you guys. Now, I know, Colin, you liked Insidious, right?
Yeah, I did, actually.
And did you like the second one?
I'd have to go back and look. I don't remember if I liked it or not.
I get, honest to God, I get confused by which ones are which.
Right.
Seriously.
And the Conjuring movies had a prequel as well, like a year or two ago.
Was that Annabelle?
Yeah.
That was terrible.
And that was terrible.
Yeah. Well, Juan didn't direct that one.
No.
All right. So anyway, but yeah, all three of us are recommending the Conjuring 2. So there you go. All right. Next week, obviously the big one is Finding Dory, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, and then
big one, Central Intelligence, next week, and a little documentary on a filmmaker named Brian De Palma.
Right, that's the only thing I care about next week.
Right.
I don't care about anything else. I'll be knocking on the door at the Music Box on Friday going, can you let me in now?
Yeah. Speaking of master craftsmen who repeat themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I don't know, but for some reason.
Fair play.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Either it hits you or it doesn't.
I like the problem.
All right. By the way,
the Music Box is pretty much going all out with the De Palma movie. They're showing a bunch of De Palma movies that whole week.
Right. It's a De Palma retrospective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I would have programmed it. That's all I'm saying. Because I would not have shown
a few films. Yeah.
I wouldn't have shown. I can tell you this. I wouldn't have shown Carlito's Way twice. That's for sure. And in leaving out Sisters and Casualties of War, for me, Raising Kane. I think is a mistake. That's just, especially Sisters. I mean, I was thrilled that they were showing Phantom of Paradise. I didn't think they would show that.
Yeah, I'm going to that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to Blowout. There's any chance to see Blowout on the big screen, and I'm there. They're showing a lot of great movies. They're showing Body Double. They're showing Dressed to Kill, The Untouchables. I just think that they missed a few essential ones. And I personally think Casualties of War is one of the best movies he's ever directed. And it would have been really cool to see that on the big screen. But nonetheless.
And Untouchables will be in 70 millimeter.
Oh, it is?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And most of them are in 35.
Is Blowout in 35?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man.
I'm looking at the website right now. Yeah, it's 35.
Oh, man.
And so is Carrie, and so is Scarface, and so is Dressed to Kill.
That's amazing. Okay, well, this is definitely going to be worth it. Brian De Palma, big retrospective at the Music Box all of next week. The documentary De Palma opens Friday at the Music Box, and we will definitely review that next week. And, of course, the big movie that's going to make all the money is Finding Dora. That's all coming up. Okay, guys, thanks a lot, and we will talk to you next week. Colin, okay?
All right.
All right, man, get some rest. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
All right. Bye. And then Eric, hang on. Okay, man.
Yep.
Eric Childress is going to hang on and we're going to talk about the box office. Eric does a box office analysis every week at movies.com. It's posted on Sundays when the numbers come in. And we'll talk about that and more with Eric Childress as the movie reviews continue on WGN. We got a break for the news here on 720 WGN. Back, everybody. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on a Monday morning. And it is Monday, which means my dad will be calling in a little bit to, we all could use a laugh today. We all could. So my dad's going to tell a joke to kick off your week with a laugh because it's a jokey time. Esmeralda and I are going to go head-to-head in another battle of the VH1 pop-up video board game. Which he had so much fun doing it the last time. We're going to do it again. Dan's going to be the MC of that. I think, Dan, we have to come up with a name for your MC personality for the pop-up video.
The wheels are turning.
Okay, think about that. All right, that'll be coming up a little bit later on. But right now, we got to talk box office with Eric Childress. Eric writes a box office piece for movies.com every week. We welcome Eric back to the show. Eric, tell everybody about how people can see you on the TV as well.
Yeah, on every Thursday morning on WICC TV, look up, I think it's different in Chicago in the suburbs, so look up Business First AM, that's the name of the TV show, and every Thursday morning I'm on doing a segment called Movies and Money, where we basically talk about how movies are doing, how Hollywood's doing, what's coming up for the weekend, do a preview and all that kind of good stuff.
All right, and then if you want to watch that on Thursday morning, then the wrap-up comes today.
That's right.
On this show. All right. So The Conjuring did some really good numbers. Conjuring 2, $40.3 million. How did the first one open?
First one opened to $41.8 million.
All right, so about the same, almost.
About the same, and yeah, considering how sequels have done just this year alone, the only two sequels or follow-ups that actually did better percentage drop-wise from their last film were Captain America and Batman vs. Superman.
Mm. Okay, so they did better than their previous...
Yes.
Their previous films. Okay, and The Conjuring did... Well, it was almost even.
Yeah, it's only a drop of 3.8%.
Now, what do you think about... How do you think this one is going to be legs-wise? Because obviously, you know, the audience for the big movie next week is not the audience for The Conjuring 2.
Right, but Central Intelligence might be, depending on how many people flock to that thing, and also combined with the fact that horror movies do tend to drop sharply in their second weekend, especially sequels.
Right.
But the encouraging thing about this one is the fact that the numbers were a little, the estimates were a little low. I mean, not low, but they were lower than $40 million coming into the weekend. There was sort of projections around like 36. Then all of a sudden, as ticket sales kept coming in, it was 37, then it was 38, then it was ultimately 40. Normally, when people start writing their getting their early numbers, usually the numbers are very much inflated, and we'll talk about that in the next movie. Then they tend to just sort of come down by, you know, Sunday, and then even by Monday they come down even further. But Conjuring numbers went up.
And what were the exit polls on this? Are people enjoying this movie? I mean, because I think a lot of people are liking it.
Yes, yeah, the cinema score we talked about before, it got an A-, which is the exact same grade that the first movie did. Now, most usually horror movies usually end up around like the C+ area.
Wow!
I mean, even just the way it tends to be. Anything over like a B for a horror movie is a pretty solid turnout. For an A-, that's a really solid score.
And now, what do you think is going to happen to this one? Is this going to what do you think it's going to top out at for the rest of the summer? And what did the first one do total?
First one did $144 million,
wow.
I believe.
Okay.
Which was incredible. No, $137 million. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I think that this one will definitely do over 100, probably over 110. If the word of mouth sticks and it doesn't drop too sharply, I think you'll probably see this somewhere between 120 and 125 even.
There's nothing in the marketplace horror wise for the next few weeks, right?
Not until The Shallows.
Yeah,
with the Blake.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, no, I actually can't wait either. I'm optimistic about that movie.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's her like in a bikini, so that's fine.
Right, you got me.
Second of all, there's a shark jumping on the water eating a guy in the trailer, and I went, all right, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I wish it was a little bit of a stronger director. That's
Who directed it?
Shami Kale Sera, who did Orphan and three Liam Neeson movies in a row.
Okay, all right. I happen to be a fan of Orphan.
Me too. Me too. But the Liam Neeson, like the Nonstop and Unknown or whatever.
I don't know. You're My Wife movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But I did kind of like Run All Night.
Oh, which I liked.
Yeah, I kind of like that one.
Okay, all right. Well, I have hopes for that one. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, okay, so outside of that, nothing is really going to be in the same market as The Conjuring 2. Okay, number two is Warcraft. Now, this is an interesting one that you were talking about earlier. It only made $24.3 million in the U.S., but you're saying in China this thing is, like, going nuts.
Yeah, no, this movie overseas, and Universal, what I call the battleship strategy, is they release this thing a week early overseas, and they build up a nice number, and then all of a sudden it tanks in the U.S., and then the numbers don't look so bad. But the numbers are just kind of insane overseas. Over $276 million it's made already overseas.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so this thing is already over $300 million. Now, it's going to need still like $540 total for it to break even. So I don't know exactly how much repeat viewing we're going to have in China over there. All the gamers apparently go flocking to see this thing or whatever.
Right.
But this movie's got this like brief stay of execution, unlike, Alice in the Looking Glass, which was, DOA from the get-go.
Right.
This at least, has some numbers behind it where Universe can go, well, let's wait and see what comes in. In the U.S., though, this thing isn't going to make $75 million.
Yeah, no, it's not going to.
It might not even make 70.
It's not going to get any help from the U.S. in terms of
no
numbers.
No.
Yeah, wow. Okay. All right. And that strategy now, releasing it overseas first, that's become pretty commonplace.
It has. Apparently, Universal is a big fan of it. I remember being at that CinemaCon convention they released Battleship like a month before it came out in the U.S., and they were bragging about how much money it had made overseas. And then, you know, it comes out and it makes like $60 million in the U.S.
Right.
It's like a huge bomb.
Right.
But it's not a bad strategy to get the press off your back in a little bit, because it gives them that sort of little cushion where, you know, people aren't expecting the big write-off story to come 2-3 weeks after the release, like you're going to get with Alice in Looking Glass anytime soon.
Right. Okay. Number three, your favorite, Now You See Me 2, with $23 million, made less than the original. I got to say, though, I texted you after I saw it, Eric.
Yeah, I know.
There was not an empty seat. I saw the movie on Saturday evening.
Yeah.
At Village Crossing in Skokie. It was packed.
Oh, and they all stayed to the end, huh?
Yes, they did. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's I mean, lower than the first movie opened. The first one opened to $29.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 21% off that one. And I don't think that, you know, this is not going to be like the word of mouth sensation that movie was.
No.
That made $115 million. Did very well overseas, and it certainly made enough to justify the attempt at doing a sequel.
Yeah.
I just don't think that it was one of those movies where people are like, yeah, that was good. I want more. I don't think that was what people said.
No,
that wasn't bad.
And
like
it didn't,
you, hey, that wasn't bad. I could watch that again. Oh, yeah, a sequel? I don't know if I
know that. At the end of the movie on Saturday when it ended, I didn't see a lot of people who were very enthusiastic. It's not like a bunch of people ran out and said, I can't wait to tell everybody to go see Now You See Me 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that happening.
No.
And I didn't hate it, and I'm not recommending people see it. So I don't see this one. You know, this thing will probably drop off pretty big next week as well.
Right.
All right. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, $14.8 million. Now, how big of a drop was that?
58%.
Okay. Well, that's typical of this.
58%, and this movie. I don't know how many territories it's open internationally. But it's only made $116 million worldwide.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And it's a $135 million budgeted film. So,
okay.
Yeah, this is turning out to be one of the sort of the bomb stories of the summer right now.
Now we're going to another bomb next, X-Men Apocalypse.
Not as big a bomb as you think.
Okay.
I mean, in the U.S., the numbers aren't really fantastic. But it's made $342 million overseas.
Okay.
So it's almost at $500 million worldwide, and it's not going to need much more than that to break even for Fox. So they'll be in profit on this by the time it's done.
Wow. All right. Okay. Doesn't it just feel like a bomb, though?
Well, yeah. It's like I think I said last week that it's in that same territory that, like, Batman, Superman, and Amazing Spider-Man is that – yeah, it's going to make it makes a lot of money, and it's going to make its money back for the studios. But you've kind of alienated your fan base,
right?
In that, I mean, I don't think there's, you know, even the people who were defending the Apocalypse before they even saw it against all the bad critic reviews that they were getting. I haven't seen a lot of them come out and say like, yeah, we were right about that. It was good.
You're not
hearing a lot of that,
right? And then Me Before You is number six with $9.2 million. Its total is $36.8 million. That's still pretty good, right?
Yeah, no, that's definitely going to be a hit for Warner Brothers. The drop was much bigger than I think some people were anticipating. So word of mouth isn't great on it apparently, but it's probably going to get over 45, maybe even hit $50 million.
Okay, Angry Birds is number seven. Number eight is Alice Through the Looking Glass, as you mentioned. That is an absolute bomb.
Absolute bomb. It's very possible, based on the numbers that I'm hearing, that whenever Disney writes this thing off, it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of around $350-400 million.
Wow.
Yeah. But they can afford it this year.
Yeah, they can, because number nine is Captain America Civil War. Number 10 is Jungle Book.
Exactly.
So there you go.
That's $2 billion alone with those two movies right there.
And next week is Finding Dory, so they're fine.
They're just fine.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, man. So we got Finding Dory next week, De Palma, and then Central Intelligence, because it takes a little heart and a big Johnson.
I get it. From the director of We're the Millers.
Oh, man. All right. Okay. All right, Eric. Thanks, man. Always a pleasure.
Okay.
Talk to you next week, buddy.
Later.
All right, there you go. Eric Childress, everybody. All right, we'll take a break. Movie reviews will be coming up again next week. So there you go. Make sure you stay tuned every Monday morning for full movie reviews and analysis of the box office as we do it every Monday morning.